I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We will only make games about gay dudes.
Good.
And so we're like, older dude needs to be.
Yeah.
We're not interested in coming out stories. Not interested in young people. And so, boring.
Welcome to Pocket Buds, a back pocket podcast where I talk to my best buds about video games and stuff. This week, we're talking about LGBTQ plus games. Video game characters that exist under the LGBTQ plus umbrella have existed since the 1980s. Perhaps the earliest representation of gay characters in games can be traced back to France in 1985, with Parisian developer Froggy Software releasing two games that year, Le Crime de Parking, or The Crime of the Parking Lot, and Le Mur de Berlin vers Sauteur, or The Berlin Wall Will Fall. In the former murder mystery, the tailor Paco is not only the culprit, but is also apparently gay and deals drugs.
Nice, very nice.
Then in the latter spy adventure, the main antagonist is a gay left-wing terrorist called Carlos who wants to blow up the Berlin Wall. Sans the murder, these guys kind of sound cool as hell. It's also important to note that one of Froggy Software's founders, Jean-Louis Le Breton, was involved in the May 68 student protests against capitalism, consumerism, American imperialism, and traditional institutions. His counterpart, Fabrice Gill, got married to his partner of 5 years, Roger, just last year. These inclusions of gay characters were not just intentional, but were a clear challenge of societal norms and traditions. Rockin'. A year after that, we saw the release of Moon Mist, which was the first known English language game to feature a gay character in Vivian Pentreath. Vivian was a lesbian who was deeply jealous after her former girlfriend got married to a man, with that storyline following the classic bury your gays trope. Gotta start somewhere, I guess. Since then, there have been gay, lesbian, bisexual, trans, genderqueer, and so on characters featured in a myriad of different video games. The vast majority of them haven't been playable, with the first non-heterosexual playable character in a game being Phantasmagoria 2's Curtis. That being said, he doesn't act on his attraction to his openly gay co-worker Trevor, instead is juggling two women, and then Trevor dies. Anybody else seeing a pattern here? But hey, it wasn't all doom and gloom. It's also been hypersexualized and not actually targeted at queer audiences. Take Fear Effect 2 Retro Helix, for example, where the relationship between Hanatsu Vachel and Rain Chin was semi-implied, but their sexy lady selves were bikini-clad and all over each other in advertising for the game. That being said, I do have no choice but to stand my bisexual queens. And then there are the cases of gay developers adding in representation as protest, like with 1996's Simcopter. An unnamed developer added bimbos to the game, which then led the game's designer, Jacques Servin, who is gay himself, to go ape. He decided to add shirtless male characters that not only kiss each other, but also kiss the player character. This led to him being fired and the hunky gay kisses being removed. Living up to his name, Jacques really was servant. It only makes sense that queer representation in games has gotten better over time, though, and a lot more prevalent. The introduction of player sexual means that games with romance options within them allowed for the player to enter same-sex relationships willy-nilly. And you're seeing time and time again games with LGBTQ plus characters being complimented on their representation or criticized when it's justified. And sometimes it's not justified. People are just dumb babies. With more diverse communities entering the industry, it's safe to say that we'll probably be seeing plenty more stories that explore LGBTQ themes, especially in the indie world. So what goes into it? How are queer developers telling their story through media's most interactive medium so you too can be a gay man in the virtual world? Joining me today to talk about making gay games is co-founder of award-winning indie studio Fuzzy Ghost, Pete Foley.
Pete.
Hello.
How are you going?
I am good.
You're good?
Especially good because you.
Because Scotty's here.
Friend.
Listeners will know if they watch the main show and watch anything of ours, really. They know Scotty and they know her presence. But the problem with being in like an audio format is you can't see her.
Yeah, I pointed and realized that didn't work very well.
Yeah. No, it's okay. Physical. I do a lot of physical comedy. And so let me tell you, when I do something funny with my hands, these listeners will not be able to tell. And boy, does that break my heart. It really ruins me. So how did you and Scott find yourself in the game development world?
We had been commercial animators for a good while. I'd been doing it for like 10 years. Scotty and I had kind of partnered up to be a director duo together, which is where Fuzzy Ghost first existed. And then one day, I think it was like the first lockdown stopped and we were on our first holiday down in Kayama. And I was bitching about how hard it is to make animated films and how hard it is to get anyone to watch them. Because all I ever want to do is tell stories. That's all I've ever wanted to do. And Scott's like, stop talking about games and just see if he can make one. And so then 3 months later, we released Pebble Witch. turns out we could.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that.
Yeah. And what was Pebble Witch about?
Pebble Witch was set in Kayama.
Amazing.
And you play a intern Pebble Witch. And a Pebble Witch's job is basically to find rocks that have some kind of unresolved trauma. So on your first day on the job, you get the train into Kayama and you meet your teacher and you just have to go around finding ancient rocks that have some kind of unresolved trauma and help them through it.
That's beautiful.
It's like it takes like 30 minutes to play.
Oh.
And it was basically me learning Unity and visual scripting at the time.
Yeah.
And seeing if we could do it.
Well, what better way to kind of learn how to make video games than to just make one?
It's the only way I can do it. Yeah. I get really, like, I can tutorial for a while, but I need like an end goal and I need something that I can present and is finished.
Totally. I mean, 90% of jobs can be learned on the job. So makes sense.
That's how we did it.
Well, how's your experience kind of been like in the industry thus far?
Shocking. Like so good, like in a really, really good way. So like we did that. We were still working our freelancy jobs, of course.
Yeah.
Because that brings in no money when you sell a game for $4 that takes 30 minutes.
Mm.
And then we spent 18 months as like freelance work was starting to get quiet, 18 months making Queer Man Peering into a rockpool.jpg and just expected nobody to see it because we didn't know anybody really in the industry, didn't really know anything about it. And then suddenly we got nominated for the AGDA for Emerging Games. And we were like, it was this really lovely time where we went down to Melbourne for the awards and knowing nobody. And we somehow managed to get invited to, there was a PlayStation Indies party at South Bank. And we went there and we were standing there knowing nobody. And the food was so good. Mm. And Scott turned and was like, you know what? Even if we meet nobody and have a really nothing week this week, at least we had really good finger food provided by PlayStation. Isn't that fun?
Yeah. What a beautiful way to look at it.
And it was really lovely. And then the rest of the week unfolded and we won the award and we met like a million people that are now like dear friends of ours.
Mm.
And for the first time realized that maybe we do have community. Oh. It was so sweet. It was so lovely.
Yeah.
And continues to be gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like the actors – you meet, and just kind of going to Games Week during that time of the actors, you meet so many people.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I've made, like, to be fair, there were friendships that I maybe made, like, what, like a year or two ago, but, like, they feel like lifelong friendships.
Oh, absolutely. I'm shocked that that was only, what, 2022?
Yeah.
That's crazy because my life is so different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, like, you mentioned Queer Man peering into a rockpool.jpg. What was kind of the conceptual driver behind that?
We, after Pebble Witch, we were like, okay, let's make something that's a little more, let's just make it something for us. And so we like to, like, we go for a walk around the park with our morning coffee, and that's like how we kind of jam about everything. And Scotty really loved this image of someone picking through stuff in a swamp. Like there was like a, I think he read a short story about, there was, you know, okay, I'm getting a few steps removed now. There's one shot in Mad Max Fury Road that has these stilt walkers in the foreground, right towards the end, I think.
Yeah.
In that really dark, shadowy area. And they are kind of based on, I believe, these French, it was actually a job or something, I'm butchering this, but they would actually be on stilts through the swamp and they would pick through stuff. And then that was kind of how they, like, scavenged or farmed or something. Yeah. And so Scott really loved that image, and we were just kind of riffing on the idea of things washing up on a shore, and that's kind of where the idea of finding rock, like, things in rock pools, because then we also love the rock pools down in, like, Bondi and stuff like that. And then we were like, what is this kind of gay rep going to be? Because we will only make games about gay dudes.
Good.
And so we're like, older dude needs to be. Let's go.
Yeah.
We're not interested in coming out stories. Not interested in young people. And so boring. Yeah. And so I guess that started, and we'd been watching a lot of Evangelion. So there's a lot of Ava references in there. We always want, not so much with our new game, but with those two games, there was very much this, especially post lockdowns, wanting to encourage quiet and slowing down and making peace with that. And we're big lovers of slow cinema. And one of our favorite directors of slow cinema, Tsai Ming-Liang, has a film called The Hole, which is a core, like a core reference in Queer Man Peering. And it also is about like a plague that breaks out in Taiwan. Mm. And so it kind of worked really well with what we'd been going through in COVID. And just kind of, and also weird and absurd and funny and cool. And we just loved the idea of not piggybacking, like referencing so hard all of these films and all of these references, but making our own thing out of that. It is about, you know, what can an apocalypse look like that isn't necessarily horrible, but is our own doing, and what is the internet and sludge of like all of consciousness is jammed together, that kind of thing. You know, no big deal.
Yeah, it's simple
everyday
stuff.
Everyday shit.
Yeah, just stuff that you kind of come across in day life.
And also, where's my boyfriend?
And also, where the hell is my boyfriend?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you think both developers, well, like writers, but also developers and players could benefit from more queer stories revolving around older people in the community?
I mean, it's kind of like, how do you write a story for a person?
Yeah.
Like that's all it is, really. I think I, especially with Bong, that's his name is Bong, which is Cambodian for friend, not actually a toke reference. I'm so hip and with the lingo.
You're with it.
With him, I often think about you get these, you'd see these beautiful queer people that are like 10, 20 years older and just looking up and going like, God, they're so cool. I just want to be that. And he was, I think a large part of Bong was creating someone kind of like that, but a little bit more of a charming, like doesn't really know loser.
Mm.
And the him being gay is a big part of who he is, like how he dresses, how he acts, his mannerisms, but everything else that happens to him, I guess, could happen to anybody else.
Yeah.
But it didn't. So yeah.
It was just him. I remember playing that game. Like my first thought was like, I want that coat. I want that coat.
I have that coat.
You have that
coat? It's based on a coat that we have. Yeah.
Where'd you get it?
Dashy, Scott, my other partner, it's his. He's had it since, I think, before I knew him. So it's like 21 years old or more.
It reminded me so much of, I used to do contemporary dance as a child.
I'm listening.
Yeah. And there was this one performance we did. I think it was Get the Party Started by Pink. Uh-huh. And I was the main dancer, which I was so proud of. And I had this big off fluffy hot pink coat.
Yes.
Which like went down to my knees. It was huge. I have been looking for something like that to this day.
Oh my God.
The Dance Academy will not return my calls. I need that coat so bad. It was incredible.
Like a pink, like the Fraggles meets the Matrix. That's what I'm seeing in my brain.
Yeah. It's very that. It's very that coded, but it's amazing. So I'd love to talk a bit about Janet DeMornay as well. So how'd that start?
Our next game is called Janet DeMornay as a Slumlord and a Witch. Uh-huh. Queerman, by the end of it, was a really traumatic time. It was because it wasn't based, like, gameplay-wise on another game. Mm. We were reinventing wheels like morons. And we almost shelved it so much in that last 6 months before release and then didn't. And then within like 2 weeks, we're talking about the next game, like so much for a break. And I think Janet started actually as like the idea of a super team and a bunch of queers that were fighting a witch in Sydney.
Yeah.
And the main character's kind of ability, spells that he could do, was basically hyperfixating. And so you just like stare and stare, and then like basically a witch couldn't do anything while you're hyperfixating on them. And so that was like the initial premise. And so it was all like different types of attention. So like someone would get really distracted, so their ability was like spinning down rabbit holes, and I don't know, we were just riffing. Yeah. And then partway through one of the morning walks, Scott was like, I just wish that we could like make a game about shit. You know, like renting just fucking sucks in Sydney.
Mm.
And I was like, well,
okay.
We f***ing pivot then.
Let's do it.
Like, and then within 10 minutes, we're like, oh, cool. And we'll set it in our house. Because we'd moved out of this house at this point. But in Queerman Peering, there's like this mashup texture neighborhood of Sydney that gets uncovered as the water goes down.
Mm.
And that's all the neighborhood that we lived before we'd started making games. We lived there for like 7 years in Chippendale. But we deeply, like, such a formative time in Sydney was spent in this terrace house.
Yeah.
And so we kept wanting to talk about it. And so we're like, well, we'll just set it in that house. And so the house in Janet DeMornay is a recreation of the terrace we lived in. And so we had to move out because we found when we moved the carpet underneath the bed, the floorboards were eaten through by black mold. And so we figured maybe it was time to get out.
Yeah.
And our lungs probably weren't having the best time.
No.
And it just was one of those things that when we were riffing with the idea of, you know, it's about renting because renting sucks and your landlord's a witch.
Yeah.
And anytime we'd say it, like, people's eyes would light up.
Yeah.
And especially after Queer Man, where you try to describe what the f*** that game is about, and people are just like, okay, sure. I guess what you're saying exists. But then to go from that to like, oh, yeah, it's about renting and your landlord's a witch and just how much it f***ing sucks to rent. And people are like, well, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And the energy difference is heaven.
Yeah. To go from like rooted in reality but ultimately deeply fantastical to incredibly relatable but also fantastical, I think is a huge switch. I think it rocks.
It's fun.
It's really
it's a good time.
Yeah. And I remember as well you were collecting horror rental stories as well.
Yes. So we loved playing Remedy's Control.
Yeah.
Because though, well, not only because, but the collectible case files are just such a joy. Like you will sit there. I don't know that I've ever played a game. Scott and I played it together and I was like backseat driving as I often do.
Mm.
And he'd find a case file that is like 6 paragraphs long and we would stop what we were doing and we just learn about this cursed fridge that would kill people if you stopped looking at it. Like the best story, so good. And so we're really inspired by that and you know, always like the idea of collectibles.
Mm.
And so this was kind of a way of, because we kind of want this to have an element of like renter catharsis.
Mm.
Like it's not teaching anybody that renting's a bad time. It's not teaching anybody that landlords are maybe a controlling upper class that need to be fucking reined in. But because it's for us, it's for the renters
yeah.
and us just having a fucking cathartic bitch session And so, yeah, a lot of the case files, you collect them and they are framed as a real estate in the game. It's like them keeping track of complaints that they've had. Mm. All like names are redacted, of course.
Obviously, yeah.
But yeah, the majority of them are actual people's lived experience, which we realized we've had a f-ing great run compared to some of the creepy bullshit that these people have had to deal with. It's horrific.
Yeah, I feel like you can ask any person what their experience has been like renting in Sydney, or really like anywhere in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Sydney's crazy for it because it costs so much and people are still going through that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
and the quality is often worse.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm paying $400 a week to live in a 3-person share house. And also, my landlord just painted over the black mold.
Well, like, I found that my landlord sometimes hides under the patio in our front yard. That's one of the stories that stays with me.
That's a real horror story.
Oh, yeah.
That is terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is wrong with that?
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of bad times.
Yeah. Oh, it's it's bad times. But the good times are rolling in with something completely different. Representation of LGBTQ people in video games. And what's kind of your take on representation in games of queer people now versus, quote unquote, how it used to be?
Like, I guess what I think of with that is like your AAA stuff that has your like, I don't have a big problem with player sexual. Mm. I think that's quite fun. But then sometimes when your companion has dialogue and has to acknowledge that you are playing a male identifying character, that's where this question gets answered, I guess. Mm. And I find that I feel like it's getting a lot better. There's less, maybe it's less about those characters actually and more other people remarking about, like when there are NPCs that are queer and they're no longer the butt of the jokes, or it's less cool for someone to be like unquestionably disgusted by it, or really fucking low level. it's a low bar.
Yeah.
It is getting better and cooler. Like Baldur's Gate 3 did a great job of just, there was so much queer and it really didn't matter. And it was just rad and celebrated and very present.
Yeah, very beautiful. That game is beautiful.
Yeah. So hot.
So good. It's funny because it's like there's this whole conversation at the moment about not sexuality in the sense of like
orientation,
yeah, but sexuality, you know, just as
just being horny
in video games. And it's like,
and dudes like, just not understanding, yeah,
not getting it, yeah, at all. It's like, well, why is this okay and this isn't? It's like, it's all okay, you're just being weird.
Yeah.
You're just making it weird.
Yeah. And also recognize that, like, you can like something and people can say, oh, I think that's kind of shit.
Yeah.
And you can still like it, maybe question, like, do some reading, but these people don't want to do reading.
Yeah. They just want to yell and they just want to be stupid and they just want to pay $8 for a blue tick. What a funny little life we lead. I watched a really interesting video that kind of argues that good queer representation in media in general, you know, you got your video games, but also your movies and your TV shows, it's kind of become boring due to writers kind of feeling the need to water down queerness in order to make it, I guess, easier to swallow for cishet audiences. The best example I think in games would probably be Gay Tony in Grand Theft Auto 4, who had very mixed responses. You know, some people thought it was great that they had like a big queer character in Grand Theft Auto that wasn't really the butt of a joke, but others were like, his name is just Gay Tony and that's the end of it, especially in The Ballad of Gay Tony where he's a main character in it, but the protagonist is still a straight man that's a womanizer. And it's like, it's just sort of there. So do you think there's kind of like a fear around making characters?
Totally. I think that's when you need like, and this is why stuff like the Dragon Ages did it so well, because you have someone like David Gator, who is a queer man, who is like writing these characters. And if people have any pushback, it's like, well, like, I'm sorry that I wrote my people like that. Shut up. Like, and that's the problem, I guess. I don't necessarily believe that you can only write what you know.
Mm.
But when you don't have enough written.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It does get really dangerous.
Yeah.
And so as a queer dude, like, I'm super happy, like, straights f***ing write my people, let's go.
Yeah.
But if I don't have much representation on screen, and then when it does happen, it's written by a straight person who's doing a poor job of it, it's like, come on.
Yeah. It's like, am I a joke to you?
We're right here.
Yeah.
And it's not like we're not creative. We can write, man.
Oh, my God. What do you think as well of kind of the reclamation of queer characters in games that were originally made to be a sort of comic relief? Let's say Birdo from Mario, I think, is probably the best example.
Love, I mean, first and foremost, identify myself as queer, which in itself is a reclamation, like a reclaiming of being a weirdo, yeah. Being queer. It's a cultural thing, I think, especially amongst gay men, to like have this sense of humor and irony and charm of owning things that were meant to be terrible.
Mm.
But then you see the camp in it and you're like, no, actually, we've moved far enough now that I f***ing love this.
Yeah.
And I that's really powerful, and I think that's wonderful. Mm. You obviously, you need more than that. And a lot of that does come from living on scraps. But also, there's more stuff being made. Support more people making more things so that more things get made, and don't complain about what people like and how people are doing it. I don't know. There's more to unpack there that I haven't quite thought through.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And I like Dan Golding, he mentioned that the best way for games to get made is for people making them to be financially secure.
Mm-hmm.
That can be done, you know, through raising the rate or just making government support, not just in a Screen Australia or Vic Screen sense, but literally in, you know, Centrelink payments and stuff,
mm-hmm.
better and easier to access.
Yep.
And because when creatives don't have to worry about whether or not they're able to pay rent, they're probably going to be able to make something beautiful.
Universal basic income, let's go.
Literally, like, come on. Yeah. But, you know, we were talking about that and I feel like it rings so true, especially considering when it comes to things like poverty, it's usually minority groups that are most affected
mm-hmm.
by it. And so I feel like with, you know, especially queer communities, I feel like having that safety net, we'd probably see more stories.
It'd be incredible.
Right?
Absolutely. You'd see some really bonkers, beautiful, like, I don't doubt that anytime we have things like that, like, and I think with like our state and federal funding and stuff like that, we're seeing amazing stuff that we would not see.
Mm.
So just imagine the scale of that difference if people didn't even have to, like, if it wasn't a competition to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So as well with Janet DeMornay too, I love queer horror stories. like I love when the world of horror and queerness converges.
Hell yeah.
What I don't love is when it becomes a bury your gays story.
Oh, Jesus. So, yeah, no.
Yeah. So what's your take on
look, there's a few kind of core beliefs of Fuzzy Ghost.
Mm.
We will, I think anyway, at the moment, always write about a queer man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, there's been a few times where we're like, oh, like, maybe we should be leaning a bit more into NB. And it's like, love my veys, but we're still not seeing enough of queer men. And that's like, that's our thing. So let's like, nope, let's do our job. So like portray gay men and they largely have to end happy. Or at least like confused is fine, like traumatized, whatever, but like just not miserable.
Yeah.
Because I still, oh shit, what was the film that came out recently? The Fellow Travelers?
Yeah.
No. All of Us Strangers.
Yeah. Hotties. Sorry,
oh my God.
I'll say it. I'll say it.
I was hot flushing the whole film. I was like, is this menopause? Is it coming for me? No, it's just two hot men constantly making out on screen. Yeah. Oh, yeah, gorgeous. But I had been warned that it ended particularly mean. And like the word mean really stuck with me. And so I got to a point where I was like, oh, I can see this maybe taking a turn. And got Scott, who was not watching it, was like, can you please wiki the end of this and tell me if I should keep watching? And I was like, no, you're right. And so I have not watched the end. I do know what happens, but it is horrible. I do not need to see the end and will not see the end.
Yeah.
Like almost every film I saw growing up that was gay ended with the gay character being beaten up, his partner being beaten up, him being killed, his partner being killed, or they both die of HIV-related complications, or they just self-sabotage so much that they're sad. And like valid stories. But when they're 90% of your stories, that shit takes a toll and I cannot and will not participate.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite films came out a similar time to another one of my favorites, because I love Priscilla. I do love Priscilla. Mm-hmm. But another movie I love, which a lot of people were like, oh, it's the American Priscilla. I feel like it's way different. There are obviously similarities, but Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything.
I haven't seen it. It just never landed in my eyeballs, and I don't know how.
You got to see it.
Yeah, I know.
I think what I love most about that film is it is a through and through happy ending.
Yeah.
Like it is just good vibes. Yeah. Like understanding, acceptance, and they all lived happily ever after.
Heck yeah.
And apparently a little behind the scenes thing, when it came to casting the three main characters who are all drag queens, the three who ended up getting the roles, Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes, and John Leguizamo, all were chomping at the bit to get those roles. They were like, apparently line out the door of people auditioning for these roles, which, you know, is surprising and heartwarming, because sometimes there is the misconception that men in Hollywood would not want to dress up as a woman.
And getting blacklisted and all that, typecast or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. But with these roles, they were highly sought after.
Hell yeah.
And apparently the casting directors were just like, these three, they are the ones.
Yes.
And God, were they perfect. That is just such a delightful film. And I feel like we're kind of moving towards like gay representation in media, having more happy endings.
Yeah, I hope
but
so.
But for some reason, still falling back on barrier gays and still falling back on queer tragedy. Why do you think that is?
I think it might just be unfortunate timing, because like stories in general have this weird, we're in the middle of a trend where it has to be dark and broody to be important. And like something like, I think Nolan makes quite silly, campy films, but because everyone is like, I'm serious and important, everyone's like, oh, it's a man talking gruff. It has to be important and serious. Mm-hmm. Like Love was a force of the universe and his plots never make sense. Like, that's fine. But can we just admit that it's melodrama and it's a bit silly? And like, yeah. And so like the idea that things can end happily somehow will undermine how important the story is.
Mm.
Also like a main water cooler conversation is, oh man, I was so devastated. Like that's how you know something is making traction on Netflix, is because people can be like, I was so devastated. How devastated were you? I was so devastated. And I don't love that.
No.
I get it. It's like, it's an easy quantifiable, like cried for 17 minutes this time. Like,
yeah, it's like, oh, well, media being a driver of empathy, when you hear about a story that elicits such a strong emotional reaction, it's like, oh, it must be good. And like, look, sometimes it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, what about those, what about the media that elicits a strong emotional response in a good way?
Absolutely. And I think, right. I think that's the thing. I wonder if, as representation, like, kind of accelerated, like, it, I hope that trajectory is continuing now.
Mm.
If it happened while we're in a different trend, we wouldn't be getting the resurgence of the barrier gaze so much. I don't know. But then you get things like Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which you can't call that a happy ending, but it's not a barrier gaze ending either. No, it kind of is. Anyway, I loved it. Yeah. there's different ways of doing it. And I think it's a larger trend that makes that happen now, which is a bummer. But
yeah,
we're getting more.
I think this is arguably one of my dorkiest interests. And I say that being the person that I am. But when did I start watching? I probably started watching it when it came out, and I don't remember when it came out, but I have been a big Steven Universe fan for many, many years since it released. And I remember it for being like this really loud, proud, and happy representation.
Just gorgeous.
Of queer.
Absolutely gorgeous.
You know, like very much focusing on women as well, which, you know, that's a whole other conversation. But like, I remember there was a song, I think it was Stronger Than You, done by Estelle, love her. And it was about, you know, two women, they're gems, so it's like, oh, no gender, but two women being so in love that their connection makes them stronger, makes them whole, and makes them this exceptional being.
Yeah.
And that, I feel like, actually had a very strong emotional response from me, because I was like, this is
incredible,
beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's so, it, like, that is an example. It's like, it's, it can be done.
Yeah.
It can be done, you know, and kind of moving into queer women representation in video games, that one started very much not for women.
No.
It was very much just like, I think the first one was, it was some Japanese game where it was like a gunfighting game, but then in between that it was like static shots of like lesbian encounters.
But there was Fear Effect was the first time I remember hearing about one of the main characters being gay. And I mean, they very much had the like them holding each other close and popping a hip and the titties are out and that kind of thing. It was kind of just how women were shown on game covers. I found the game too hard to ever actually get far enough into the story to be able to see any of that for myself, so I don't know how that went. I think it was maybe more in the sequel than the first one.
Yeah. Well, like, it's interesting because with those stories of kind of like hypersexualization of lesbian relationships, like that was interesting. But then I feel like we've kind of moved to a point where it's almost, to me at least, become kind of infantilized in a lot of it. And no, infantilized is the wrong word. Maybe more, as we were talking about before we started recording, kind of your YA novel.
Oh, yeah, like really pure, very PG.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's when you said the sexualization of queer women. I'm like, I just find it such a bummer because and obviously we know why.
Yeah.
But the queer men are the ones that should be over-sexualized like that, because let's f***ing go. Like, super great.
Let's do it.
Into it, ready, not inaccurate.
Yeah.
Like, the thirsty boys in the corner.
Yeah.
That's real representation.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think, like, you know, with the conversation about watering down you know, queerness in every aspect, I feel like because and like it's fair enough, you don't want to sexualize these relationships to a point where they no longer feel like they're for the person being represented. But then at the same time, I don't think the answer to that is completely desexualizing.
No. I also think that at the moment people don't know how to, like, people are scared of talking about sex and representing sex and it's, which is, I was so chuffed. So when, can talk about Janet for a second.
Go on.
When you submit, we were recently in, which one was this? The Day of the Devs for the Game Awards. And so you just submit like gameplay footage and they will cut together a part that plays while you talk about and introduce your game. And one of the opening, one of the shots that I gave them, and I was like, they're not going to put this in, was the main character Andrew waking up and his housemate and lover Jam is in bed face down with his like bare hairy butt just there while he's asleep in bed. Mm. And it's just a fleeting moment in the shot as he leaves the room and goes into horror. And it was there. They used the footage and I was so chuffed. Oh. I'm like, yeah, hairy butt represent.
No, that rocks. It's so, and it's not done as like a,
No, like, it's
no,
like,
that's just life.
No, he's just, he's there.
Bodies are normal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I feel like not acting like it makes, suddenly makes it more weird. Like it's already uncomfortable enough being human, the idea of being nude, showing yourself to people, whatever. But as soon as suddenly we can't talk about it, it doubles down in how weird it is.
Totally.
And like if you're already struggling with that, that's not making it any easier.
Yeah. And I feel like if we desexualize these situations so much so that we have this fear of not just talking about them but also showing them, then the only representation we have left is the hypersexualized, not for you representations where it's just like, oh, this character – like with the body of a woman but the face of a baby is getting her tits out and it's
so
weird. It's so weird. There's so many characters like that where I'm just like, yes, you have the body of a grown woman but the face of a little girl. How am I supposed to feel? I feel weird.
I've just never been so happy to be like deep down the far end of the Kinsey scale when it comes to that in that there's no confliction for me because it's like just does not register.
Just like, what is
and
that?
So I'm like, this is a thing.
Yeah.
Good for you.
But then for me, it's just like, yes, I, you know, am attracted to women. I see that and I'm like, boobie. Baby. Horrible.
Why?
It's f***ed. It's not right. And it's normalized, you know, but as well, like from your perspective as somebody, you know, who has said yourself that, you're making games about queer men.
Mm-hmm.
As a queer man, how do you think personal, real world experiences of queerness have an effect on narratives that explore those themes?
You mean like, is there much of like me and us in the game?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like so much of it is, I mean, I think that's why we always want to, we don't really enjoy, well, at the moment, we're not interested in telling much about like romantic turmoil and things like that either, because like Scott and I have been together for 10 years, I've been with Dashy for 20 years, so like very long-term relationships are my adult experience.
Yeah.
Thankfully I'm quite happy with that, and so it's a, I think that directly colors the kind of characters that we write and the relationships that we show in that, and so much of it also just in terms of, because the main, it's three people, the two boys and an NB in the house. And so, and it's a very, the NB identifies as gay. So it's very, it's just a gay house.
Gay house.
And so it's one of that very like body positive, there can be nudity in the house. And that's very much just that kind of vibe of what we've loved in queer share houses as well. And that it's just very sex positive, very, like the slut talk is fine. I actually don't know how much of that will end up like in terms of like slut talk will be a big thing because the shit starts going bad pretty quick. Like we don't have the luxury of making a 15-hour game, unfortunately. So the build up is not too long.
Yeah. And do you feel like to kind of gain that, oh yeah, queer representation because your character can be with anybody can sometimes be a little bit of a cop-out?
Absolutely. I mean, it can't be the be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
Because it's not really representation. You feel like you're being seen, but that's just like, that's the trick of playing a video game, right?
Yeah.
And so if we're talking about actual representation, it needs to be a character that, and I think this is the problem people have with player sexual as a orientation, yeah, in video games, is when it's used as the only representation, it's not.
Yeah.
But then you get like, there's the, what's the companion in Mass Effect 3? And he lost his husband in the war just before the...
I have never played a Mass Effect game.
Oh, boy.
And everybody looks at me and says, you look like someone who's played every Mass Effect game.
Yeah, it's true.
And I go, okay.
Yeah, you do. I have forgotten his name because it was a good while ago now. But he is like, because some of the characters do have, like, not all the characters are bi. Mm. And so you can only be with him if you are playing as a male character, as a male, yeah, shepherd. And so I guess like that's representation, but at the same time, when I'd get like Caden, won't be with a man, and I was fucking pissed. I'm like, no, actually give me player sexual.
But I want it.
I want it.
But I want it. Totally.
Yeah.
And I think as well, when it comes to representation, and I've had this conversation in a different way with sweet angel Ali McLean, when it comes to representation of women in games, there is this fear or just like unsurety. That's not a word, girl. Get a grip.
But it makes sense, which is all words need to,
yeah,
do.
Yeah, right? This like unsurety when it comes to where is the line, when it comes to how good should your character be versus how flawed should they be.
Oh, yeah,
and I feel
right.
like with minority characters,
yeah,
there is – this very, very fine line that like you never really know if you're crossing it, where if your character has flaws and they're not acceptable, then people will hate them.
Yep.
Or people will say they're bad representation, or people will say that they're a bad character, they're badly written, wah, wah, wee, wah. But if they're too good,
it's not like accurate. It's not real representation. Yeah. It's not, yeah. It's like idealized, puritanical. Like,
yeah,
they have to be good because they're blah, blah, blah. You know, the trick to that is you just have two. Heaven forbid there be two women or two queers
an angle
in something.
And a devil.
Yeah, that's right.
Thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, how do you think that kind of translates into queer representation in games?
I don't know. Like, I feel like it's looping back now when you were saying, like, the reclaiming things that are actually terrible representation. Like, I'm not a big Disney fan these days, but like I have a deep love of Jafar, Scar, and Ursula.
Oh,
and
I
that's
wonder
some
why.
Fucking queer rep right there. Like maybe that is a game idea for the future, so I won't say it out loud. Anyway, when your favorite cartoon role models are villains.
It's so
heaven.
And it was so obvious, right?
Yes.
Like, well, I mean, you know, it was probably intentional, but I don't think their intention was for people to end up loving them anyway.
I don't think so. I think, look, I feel like the animators animated them with a deep passion.
Mm.
And,
I mean,
and loved
divine.
Them. Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly. And so, like, I think that, but they were written because queer-coded people, you know, that does mean they're evil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's the whole Disney thing is the, I always forget the actual word for it, but the physicalized manifestation of the inside. So ugly people are always going to be bad.
Yeah.
And the only time that's not true is when they're the main character and are a hunchback. And so, like, it's that whole thing of if someone, yeah. So, like, camp people clearly can't be trusted.
Mm. It's like
because they're effeminate men.
That Roald Dahl book, The Witches?
Mm.
The meaner you are, the uglier
yeah.
you'll get.
Yeah, we know how real that is.
Which
yeah.
doesn't make sense because Rachel McAdams in Mean Girls is Regina George. Hot. I was deeply, and now Renee Rapp,
but that's
deeply
the thing.
Obsessed.
No one argues that bad people can't be beautiful.
Yeah.
So where the fuck is this coming from?
Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so funny as well because we were talking about earlier too, and as I mentioned in the intro, with those first games with gay characters, the Froggy Software games, they're both the bad guys. Like one of them's a murderer and the other one is the main antagonist and they're a left-wing terrorist. But, I mean, the way they're described,
that incredible. Sounds rad.
They kind of sound awesome,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, you're telling me this guy is gay and deals drugs? Cool. Okay. Oh, this guy's a left-wing terrorist who wants to blow up the Berlin Wall?
Slay. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, what, am I supposed to hate him? That sounds
funny. Oh, I missed that memo. Oh,
yeah. I mean, yeah, hate him. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, last but certainly not least, what is your favorite gay game? Or game that you believe is gay? Or game that you get a gay vibe from?
Definitely very gay. Look, I always come back to series Hit Me Too, a visual novel. I'm not a big visual novel player, but it's set in, oh boy, oh no, I believe Colombia. Oh okay. God, Siri, I'm so sorry if I'm wrong. I've forgotten where it's set. But I just felt like I was there with these characters and like eating the street food and going to these clubs and having a shit dance night with them, but then ending up inserting myself in their relationship. Like, I just loved it. And I felt so, there's a certain feeling of just like queer euphoria when I play a game. It's kind of like also when I listen to Fever Ray.
Yeah.
And it's just this like, oh, my people. And it's like, you know, in Final Fantasies when you do like you cast life and like a little cherub comes down and the feathers come up and the person gets resurrected. It's that feeling.
Yeah.
And so like the cherub comes down and is like, you've been blessed by tree. And I'm like, ah. And it's just like the warmest, like my people exist out there and they are making beautiful things. And this is gorgeous. And it's just so inspiring and so beautiful. That and like, tree. Wistful sigh.
I have to believe that and I don't want to.
God damn it.
Awesome. Well, Pete, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Where can we find your work?
I think everything's on Steam. I think Pebble Witch is on Steam.
Yeah.
Like Pebble Witch, Queer Man, Periential, Rockpool.jpg. Janet DeMornay is a Slumlord and a Witch. Wishlist that one now. They're on Steam. They're on itch.io. Mm.
Is there a demo available for Jenna?
No. We're only doing public demos at this point.
True.
So make your way to, I don't know, where are we demoing next? I don't actually know yet.
Yeah.
Hopefully South By. Probably South By.
True. Come to South By. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, once again, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And a big thank you to you for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting Back Pocket over on Patreon. If you support us at the silver tier and above, you can get access to our bonus episodes. In this week's bonus episode, we're deciding which queer games pop and which ones flop. Here's a sneak peek. I've just got the word flop in my head. And I'm trying to think
Well, I was going to say, do you mean like, should we be tooting and booting?
Yeah, like a tooting and booting.
And so what rhymes with flop?
Because like, what's a good word that rhymes with flop? Top?
If you're tired, maybe not.
It's maybe not good. And hey, if you really like what you're hearing, why not give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using? Better yet, why not give us a nice little review on Apple Podcasts? You can also find us on Twitch, where we've got our main live show every Thursday from 7 p.m. and on TikTok, where we're constantly posting very good stuff for you to cast your big, beautiful eyes on. And then there's the socials, a la Twitter and Threads and whatnot, which you're also welcome to get around. Once again, thanks so much for tuning in, and as the cast of Queer Eye, but if they were gamers, would say, bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.